So I was like fighting to prove that I can do this and I can do that and I can do the other, and always finding a way. And my dad was very like, how can we, you know, he's not very good woodworker, but he tried, you know, made me a very appalling long-handled hockey stick and things like this. So it's very much all I wanted to do was live a normal life. I just wanted to get married, have kids, and live in a house by the sea. So very, what I thought were unachievable goals, but I achieved it quite quick.
Welcome to the Brave, Bold, Brilliant podcast. I'm here today with Sue Ken. Now, Sue Ken is an incredible TV presenter for Gardener's World, and ambassador for the Royal Horticultural Society. I give it full title. Nice to see you, Sue.
Nice to see you too.
So we are sitting here in wonderful Caswell, overlooking the sea, where we both live. Aren't we lucky to live here?
We are. I've been lucky for over 30 years. I cannot believe I live in the best place in the world.
Well, I'm a newbie, so, you know, and I'm not from round here. So I have to say everyone's been very welcoming.
Yeah, it's a very friendly place. And because it's a small community, and so everybody knows each other. So it's lovely. We all swim together.
Well, and that's what I've got to get into, the cold water dipping, because I'm told it's supposed to be amazing.
Yeah, I've missed it this year because I've had a bit of tonsillitis, but any minute now, I start now for about the next 6 months.
So you're going to be my inspiration,
yeah,
obviously.
Like, come on, Jim.
Yeah, she'll be bullying me to doing it. This is what I need. I need a strong woman in my life to make me do stuff. So tell us about how you got onto Gardener's World, Sue, because there's a lot more we're going to talk about, but that's obviously relatively recent history in terms of you presenting and becoming a presenter during, well, COVID, I think it all first started off.
Yeah, so in 2020... COVID struck, and Gardener's World go out and about and make their films, and of course they couldn't. So they asked the viewers to send in their videos, and I had always wanted to be on Gardener's World. It's like I've got a tick list in life that I want to achieve, and one of them was to be on Gardener's World. And everybody said, oh, your garden isn't good enough. I just wanted to say, you know, I want to show how I garden. So when the viewers started sending in their videos, I thought, oh, well, mine's okay compared to that. Mine's fine. So I made a little video about tools and how I garden vegetables and sent it in. And then they phoned me and they said, we like your video. But I left a cliffhanger on the video. Go, this is my vegetable garden. The rest of my garden is a whole other story. So they asked me to tour around with my iPad. So I toured around the garden and they said, we want to make something a bit different. We've never, ever done this before. We're going to remote direct you because normally they come and film. And so they sent me an app. And of course, normally on apps, you can reverse them. You know, normally you can see what, if you're in the camera, but this you couldn't reverse. So I'd have to set it up and then run round and then check I was in it. And it actually took me 3 weeks to do. And I was like, oh no, I wish I'd never done this. And it was so hot. And everyone else who wasn't working was sort of relaxing in their gardens if they were lucky enough. And it was the first time I'd had time off for years. But I finished the film and they were super pleased with it, and it aired on the telly and they got such a huge response. Within a couple of minutes, they were ringing me saying, as soon as we can, we're going to send a film crew and we might be doing some more with you. And it went from there. But it was very interesting. I learned a lot of skills in those 3 weeks that prepared me then for, you know, I was the cameraman, I was the sound man, I was sort of slightly directing, I was, you know, the runner, and I was the presenter. So it was a very good steep learning curve.
Oh my gosh. So from starting out during COVID, and I love the fact that you did the teaser, but you left the cliffhanger, you know, hungry for more, leave the audience hungry for more. So I love that. So how's it gone from there then, from actually getting that initial sort of call?
So it's very interesting because I was still working as a sports massage therapist. And we did a few programs, and you know, I know I'm not a presenter, so the director was trying to give me hints and tips, and I was sort of learning on the job, and then the RHS contacted me, and then they came up with the idea, well, they actually contacted me to see if they could film in my garden, and I thought, well, that's a bit tick boxy, because they wanted to do a thing on disability, and I said, if you're really serious about disability, then you'll have me work with a designer to do a show garden. You'll have me write in your magazine and you'll have me at your show to do talks. And I thought, well, there you go. And fair credit to them. Within 2 hours, they'd rung me and they said, we actually want you to design a garden. We think that's a great idea. And I said, no, I didn't say that. I said, I'll work with a designer. And they said, no, we want you to design a garden. We've missed Chelsea. Can you do one for Hampton Court next year? So all of a sudden, I had this massive thing to design a show garden. And 6 months, they said, we're a bit short of time. You've got a week to design it before the deadline to, for the judging panel to see if they'll accept you. We'll extend you by a week. So I did the garden design. And it was actually because I was, you know, interested in this, that, and it was actually based on what I would do here in this garden. And it got accepted. And then I had 6 months of absolutely hard work. Like, I'd never worked so hard before. Because, again, I'm not a garden designer and I needed to get on board people to help me. So I then decided it was time to retire from sports massage and then went fully embraced it. And then in the May, they made me an ambassador as well, an RHS ambassador. So it's gone from, you know, presenting RHS ambassador. I do a lot of the shows now, talking, and I now do public speaking as well. Not necessarily all about gardening, but I'd already been doing a bit of that. I'd had an American tour about thalidomide and my other job. So I was quite used to the public speaking role. So, and I never know what's going to happen next. I just never know. I've done a book, of course, done my first book. I'm probably just about to start a second. So yes, it's all very busy.
Wow. What's the book called? We've got to give the book
so
a plug.
So my book is called Sue Kent Garden Notes, and it's sort of lots of information for people who, you know, forget things when you're gardening and why is the plant leaves turning yellow? So and how should I space my leeks? So it's a lot of general information that you forget every time. And also it's a place for you to record your garden. So what seeds you've sown, what bulbs you planted, you know, there's graph paper to draw out your borders. There's places to record what gardens you want to visit, what plants you want to buy. And of course, because I'm a sports massage therapist, there's a whole section on keeping yourself well in the garden, because, you know, gardening, you can get a bit overexcited and you can do yourself some injuries. So it's about repairing yourself, preparing yourself, and, you know, taking care of yourself, not just your garden.
Wow. So it's a whole, like, well-being and garden kind of, you know, guide, if you like.
But it also gives you a record of your garden so that you learn by your mistakes, and if you don't record your mistakes, you might forget them, and you learn by your successes. So keeping a record, you know, I've kept a record for 30 years, which has probably made me, you know, better at this job than I might have been, because I can go back and I can talk about something because I've recorded it and I know, because I've got memory like a sieve, it would all just go. So I did the book when they approached me. I already had it. I was already using it. I had made it for myself. So it needs to be tweaked and smartened up. And they had to put pictures of me in, which I thought were all, you know, I was like, no, you don't need pictures of me. This is not, you know, but apparently you do. So yeah, I'd already done it. So it didn't take long to produce.
Fantastic. So you mentioned about the disability and having an upper body disability. But of course, first and foremost, I didn't want to start with that because I wanted to talk about the fact that you're an amazing gardener, first and foremost. But of course, you know, with having the upper body disability that you've got, that you've had that all your life, right? So how have you, do you want to talk a little bit around sort of the thalidomide side of things, and also then how you approach life?
Thalidomide was a drug given to people late 1950s, early 1960s, and it caused immeasurable damage to a baby growing in the womb. And many thousands of babies, you know, died before they even got to birth stage. But so it caused leg damage, it can shorten the limbs, stop the limbs growing, it caused the eyes not to form, the ears not to form, some facial things, it caused mental problems and internal damage. So it's not just what you see. For me, it's just what you see, but for other people it can be far worse. And so as a cohort, we were brought together to help you know, work out ways of dressing, of coping, and it was very, very positive. So we have a group of people that we can, you know, call on. I've got a problem with this, da 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 da. You know, and so it was a national scandal at the time, and over the years we all learnt to drive. We had all our cars adapted. We got our own homes. We were as independent as possible, so for me, I had very interesting goals in life, because I was told that I would probably never marry. I wouldn't be able to live on my own. I wouldn't be able to cope. My parents even bought the plot of land next door to their house so that they build me a house there. So I was told all the thing I couldn't do. And so I was like, fighting to prove that I can do this and I can do that and I can do the other, and always finding a way. And my dad was very like, how can we, you know, he's not very good woodworker, but he tried, you know, made me a very appalling long-handled hockey stick and things like this. So it's very much all I wanted to do was live a normal life. I just wanted to get married, have kids and live in a house by the sea. So very, very, what I thought were unachievable goals. But I achieved it quite quickly. So then when I achieved that, I thought, right, what's next?
I love it. Because I actually interviewed Rosemary Muratori Simmons. Oh, yeah. I don't know if you know Rosie.
Yeah, I know. She's
and
a
she's
great,
great, isn't she? And she's an amazing artist, right?
Yeah.
And High Sheriff as well.
She just keeps going from strength
Phenomenal.
To strength. And she actually, I've only come across one lot of discrimination. I was doing my sports massage course. And I was going to Rosemary because I was in Cardiff learning and I was teaching the Welsh. I was massaging my training. I had to do 100 hours on athletes and I couldn't get any able-bodied athletes. So the Welsh Paralympians came to my rescue and they trained in Cardiff on the Wednesday evening. So I would go to Rosie for dinner every Wednesday. And her husband, Steve, who's also got the
lipid. Yes, I met Steve.
He would cook me dinner. And I had some discrimination on the course. And she was the one that said, Sue, you know, I've never seen you cry. I've never said you're being discriminated against. And she was on the board, I think, at the university. She said, this is what you must do. And she was totally supportive because I'd never had a problem before. And they have had more problems than I hadn't, you know, she is great. So Rosie is an amazing woman.
Yeah, she really is. And I met her actually, I did a speech at the Cardiff Business Club.
Yeah.
And I met her there. So I'm on stage and she asked me a really good question around wheelchairs and airlines and how often wheelchairs are damaged and you know, what do we need to do as an industry? And you know, really good quality conversation. And then I said to her, I'd love to have you on the podcast. Went to her house and interviewed her. So fantastic, inspirational person and real va-va-voom.
Yeah.
Like yourself, real character. And
we are
energy.
All a bit characterful.
Yeah. I love it.
When we get together, it's absolutely terrible.
I love it. So going back to kind of when you were growing up as a kid then, you said your mum and dad, you know, were obviously really supportive and I suppose...
Protective.
A combination.
Overprotective. Yeah. My mum, you know, found it very difficult and just worried about everything. And she's a glass... Is it glass half empty?
Yeah, okay.
And so it was, oh my God, you can't drive. Oh my God, you know, you can't go on the bus. I had to fight to get on the bus. So she took it quite badly. And my father's family had a paraplegic, my auntie was paraplegic because she got polio and was on a bridge. So they were all like, oh, well, you know, let's just work around this. And so that we had the two extremes, but my dad was super protective. So to get a bit of freedom was a bit of a fight, you know. But you know, I had such a lovely childhood, such a happy childhood, that I think that's a great thing, isn't it? I know you come from a loving family and so it's a great start in life.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, the whole mindset around, you said your mum was more like glass half empty.
Yeah.
And it's always a choice, isn't there?
Yeah.
Even in the darkest of moments and times, it is a choice to say, well, how can I reframe this? How can I think differently? And your energy and positivity, do you ever have bad days, Sue, where you feel a bit sorry for yourself? Or does that not just...
Very occasionally. I used to have bad days with my son is a surfer. And I'm a seabird. You know, my father comes from Essex and the whole family, they're like Olympic sailors and sail around the world. And although I can sail, I think my son was surfing and I got really good balance and I just would love to do it. And I just would watch. And of course, I had to watch him all the time. I was just jealous and I just really wanted to do it. And they've got a disabled surf thing there now, but not when I was younger. And I did have a lesson, but people have to push me to get the wave. So I was whinging about that to my friend. I've got a great friend who's got similar disability to me. And he said, stop looking at what you can't do. Stop it now and focus on what you can do. And I don't want to hear this anymore. So we got a pedal canoe because we found this guy. We saw this guy. So I now have a canoe so I can get out on the water and we pedal away. But yes, it's not indulging yourself on feeling sorry for yourself and what you can't do, because there's so much that you can do. And sometimes, you know, people have to slap you or remind you that. And there's only a couple of things. I felt absolutely, totally depressed when I couldn't nurse my parents in their old age, when they really needed that physical care at end of care life. And I found that quite hard. That was my hardest time, I think. Because they had looked after me and I wanted to, I looked after them as best I could. I got the people in, but I actually wanted to do it. Do you know what I mean? Physically do it. And I couldn't.
Yeah, no, that's it. But the whole thalidomide scandal, because when I was talking with Rosie, you know, I think people are aware that it was a drug that was given to pregnant mums to help with morning sickness. But actually what Rosie was also explaining was it was almost like paracetamol.
Oh, it was.
In America in particular, it was almost like just pain control, like you'd get an aspirin
today. Well,
they weren't
allowed it in. America didn't let it in.
Ah.
No, America didn't let it in. The Federal Drugs Administration wouldn't allow it. So it was used in Europe and Germany.
Then. Oh, okay. So across Europe then,
across Europe. So America was protected from it. And I think they got some under-the-counter ones because, the doctors were allowed to trial it. So there were a few people. But, yeah, so it was the sort of panacea tablet for everything.
Yeah, yeah.
And, and they hadn't done... Of course, they tested it on rats, but not on humans. And they had evidence, of course, they had evidence that it was causing this problem, but they covered it up because it was like money-making wonderfulness.
Absolutely shocking, isn't it? And I think also it was often prescribed to men as well for like sex drive and
dad took it to keep my mum company, and he got peripheral neuropathy of his hand. So he wouldn't let her take anymore. And it was quite funny because my mum took it, she must have taken it in like this October. A locum doctor gave it to her. She kept it in the cupboard for a while and her doctor didn't sort of contact her, and it was banned in the Christmas. So she was pregnant with me and she knew that she'd taken it. So she had this horrendous wait to see what had happened. But yes, I mean, it was a complete scandal. It was a complete, drug companies after money and... profit before people.
God, yeah. I mean, you'd like to think that we've learnt the lesson, right?
We haven't learnt the lesson.
I'm not sure we have.
So we've had the NASAS, haven't we? The Sackler scandal with the painkillers.
Yes.
And, again, covered completely up for years and, ruined hundreds and thousands of people's lives in America.
Yeah, I mean, it is shocking, absolutely shocking. But I think the fact that you approach life in such a positive, sunshiny way, it's a real inspiration, because we can all be guilty of feeling a bit down in the dumps, a bit sorry for ourselves, and I think it's just so important to surround yourself with the right people your life. Have you had times when you've had to sort of be quite selective around people that you've got in your life, whether it's friends or people around you, or generally, have you found everyone's very supportive and encouraging of what you're doing?
Well, I went to a convent. I got in to the sort of top school in Reading, and they wouldn't take me in case I fell over. And so the convent said, or a lady opposite was at the convent, and they said, why don't you go there? And they said, oh, if she falls, we'll pick her up and we'll love her. And they just made me do everything. So nothing was off, and they just adapted everything. So it was, what's difficult for you? How can we make it easy? Mm. And so the whole school, my whole year group, I were used to, I couldn't put my hand up in class, so one of my friends cut out her hand, stuck it on a ruler, and did it like this. And when we were playing, netball, everybody had to keep their hands down when I was trying to score a goal. And when we played rounders, I was given a tennis racket. And it was like, and they even tried to make me a recorder. Do you know what I mean? So it was complete join in. So that's how I expected life to be. And to be honest, that's how life went until I tried to do the sports massage. And when I did that, I trained as a massage therapist first because my parents were ill and I couldn't keep, I was in marketing. I wasn't using my feet. I was just desk job. I knew I needed flexibility with appointments for hospitals and stuff. So I had always been using my feet to put sun cream on my kids. And I'd had massage a lot because my mum wanted me to keep my legs free from varicose veins. And so I thought, I think I can do this. I quite like to do something physical and not mental for a change because I've got enough stress with my mum and dad.
Yeah.
And so I trained as a massage therapist. So I was already qualified. I was feeling so much, my feet are so much stronger, and I wanted to be, I thought I want to take it further. And I got a grant to do sports massage. And I rang the lady who did the course. And she said, oh, you won't be able to manage. I don't want to take your money. And it was the first time I'd had someone tell me before I'd even started that I couldn't do something. And I said, would you like me to come and give you a massage? You know, I understand the concept's really weird. You know, but they do it in other countries. No, that won't be necessary. I've just got to warn you. You know, I don't want to take your money and you're not realise. You might get a weightlifter. And I said, well, why is that going to be a problem? You know, I'm really strong. So anyway, I got to the course and then the guy there and then told me I couldn't do it as well as everybody. You know, it's just, you can't. And then they stopped me doing my 100 hours. They found reasons for me not to work on their athletes. And that's where Rosie came in. And that's where my local doctor, because I got checked out to see that I was all right before I was doing this. And he worked with the Paralympians and he got me to work with the Paralympians. So it is about then, and I just had to cut these people, you know, I just had to take it on the chin that I had to deal with these people. But it was a really horrible experience. But from every experience, bad experience, you learn. So, you know, Rosie, as we talked about, has been fighting all her life. I had cruised it. And I suddenly realised, you know, what other people were up against all the time. Mm. And I thought, you know, now I need to stand up and I need to be counted. And so being on Gardener's World is a way of making us more visible. It's the way I can, you know, stand up and help and make disability and make people realise that things may have to be adjusted. But it's a positive experience. And so I'm very keen to play my role because I realised how much I cruised it, you know, and I'd relied on other people to fight the good fight.
Yeah.
So now I feel that I need to stand up and in my own way, you know, do it in my own way.
Yeah, you've got to be true to your own values, haven't you, and be congruent with that. So with the gardening then, you do everything with your feet,
No.
Combination.
I do a combination. So tough stuff.
Yeah.
Indelicate stuff I do with my feet.
Yes.
I have like rubber gloves I put on my feet. And because I was, when I was running the two, of course I have to keep my feet really beautiful for the massage.
Yeah,
so it's like, oh my God, I'm scrubbing as I am pedicures every time. And now I don't have to worry about that so much. And the tough stuff. The tough stuff I do with my feet, the delicate like seeds I do with my hands, and sometimes I use my teeth, but gardening is full of like bugs and stuff, so I can end up like having a really dodgy tummy, or probably why I've got this sore throat thing. So I try not to use my teeth, but they're like my other hand, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I use any part of my body that's available to help.
Wow.
Knees, you know, ankles, bottom, you know, it all gets used.
Yeah, fantastic. Oh my gosh. No, but it just shows you, doesn't it? You know, if you've got a barrier, you're thinking about how do I get around this? How can I be creative? You know, I mean, there's a lot of lessons for even able-bodied people when they face a challenge, rather than giving up, thinking, well, no, hang on a minute, try a different way.
Is there a different way? And also, it's not just how you do it, it's the plants you choose.
Yeah.
Because some plants are really difficult to manage and some plants are much easier. But, you know, working for the BBC, you know, after sports massage and, you know, the barriers only just started with that course, the BBC are so enabling. They're so wonderful. They go, what works for you? And they make me think even more, what works for me? You know, they've sort of put me on turbo on what works for me. And not being afraid to say, whereas in sports massage, I was desperately trying to not make a fuss and I can do this and prove a point. I can actually say, yeah, I can't do that. And this is actually really tiring and I'd rather do that. So that's lovely. But yes, feet, hands, everything gets used. And obviously I've got a huge garden. And over the years, as one gets older, I'm getting a bit more knackered. We're making changes to make it easier.
Mm.
But I think it's not just landscaping, it's plant choices. And that's a thing that, you know, it's showing people there are lots of different ways. And I love helping people, so I love to sort of say, you know, open their minds to different possibilities.
Yeah, it's the perfect role for you, isn't it?
It is.
Really, it's like, do you ever feel in your life that you're exactly where you're meant to be at that point of time?
I do now. I slightly wish it came earlier. I had a bit more energy and to take it forward, to expand it. But, you know, because there's so much opportunity, But you know, I'm just grateful for this, and I'm trying to balance. I had a great, you know, I'm trying to balance, you know, all the work, such a lot of work coming in, and of course I've got four grandchildren, and it's like, oh my goodness, where's the time? I like the self-run a property thing, so it's like,
yeah, you've got a lot going on, absolutely. So there's no sign of you slowing down, is there really?
But I do fall asleep a lot on the sofa. Yeah, I'm asleep in front of the telly at 9:30.
Well, I'm a bit like, 10 o'clock's a late night these days. Oh my god. But with all the different things that you've got going on and becoming a presenter, because a lot of times I think people they shy away from public speaking, right? You know, some people just cannot imagine being in front of a camera, presenting, standing on a stage, and you do a lot of public speaking as well as the presenting side. Did that come naturally to you, Sue? Or did you have to really work on the, you know, building your skills and experience in that area? Because some people say it's a fate
worse than death. And I was asked to go on the telly when I was much younger, and I just couldn't do it. I trained as an opera singer. But I couldn't cope with because my mum thought I should use my voice, and you know, because she was trying to look for a career, but I couldn't cope with in public, making the fear of making a mistake. And so I missed a lot of opportunities. And then one day a client came in, and he actually lives just down the road in the flats now. And he's very entrepreneurial, he's got a great business, and he does a lot of public speaking. He said, would you mind if I don't speak to you? I've got to learn a talk. And he had his earphones in, and I was massaging him away. And he's very like you. He's like business. What makes everything work? And I was talking about his body, and he was talking about my mind. And he said, Sue, the reason why people can't do public speaking is they're not well prepared enough. And he said, you need to learn this. You need to have done it in front of a camera yourself. You need to have recorded it. You need to do it 20 times. He said, then it will work. So I did what he said. And it worked. And it was like, oh my goodness. And it was a huge, and I was so confident because I knew what I was going to say. Mm. I didn't have to worry about, and if I forgot a bit, I knew so much, I knew it so well, I could hop back. And so I gradually finessed my skills. And then I also I've listened to a lot of podcasts on public speaking, a lot of YouTube videos on what makes a good talk. Learning my skills with the presenting. Because you're on your own in front of, when I did it first on my own in front of a camera, no one's there, so you're just talking to yourself. And because of my experience, as I said, with the sports massage, when they said, you know, you're quite, I don't know why I'm good at it, I'm just accepting the fact that people say I'm good at it, I thought, I'm going to do this, because it's important to see disability. There's so many people in the world with disability and they're not represented on the television. Mm. And it's important to get that representation up, to be visually seen, so that other people just accept it. So when you walk down the street, you're not stared at as something unusual. And the more visual experience people have of people with difference, the better. So I just thought, I'm going to do this. I'm just not going to allow the doubting thoughts. I hate watching myself on the telly because I don't see myself as disabled. I'm not aware my arms are short, you know what I mean? Because they're my arms. And then I suddenly look and I go, oh, that's so awful. I'm bending in half. Oh my God. And I can't stand it. And my husband loves watching it because he's used to watching me, and I absolutely hate it. So I'd rather just do it and not ever see it again.
So what tips would you give to someone that's maybe thinking, oh, you know, I really want to, maybe I should do some public speaking, maybe I should put myself out there? What would you encourage people to do?
What I would do is, what do you want to talk about? And you have to learn about timings. You know, you have to learn not to put too much information in, and to give yourself, if you read it to yourself and you've got half an hour and it takes half an hour when you read it, you need to cut it back by 5 minutes because you need that time, because you won't make jokes or you won't make it interesting when you're learning it yourself. And it's not until you get in front of a live audience will things sort of start to happen. And learn it, record yourself. Get a group of friends around, do it in front of them, get some people who are in the know in the subject, test it in front of them, get their criticism, and be prepared to take that on board. And be prepared to cock it up occasionally. And so I think practice in all different ways. And the other thing that I learned last year, I was doing a show and the tech went down, and the tech wasn't suitable. And I didn't have, my brother was in the audience and he said, you haven't got resilience to work without the tech. You need to get that. So I was caught out this year with no tech earlier this spring now. And I had got the resilience now because I practiced what would happen with this. If there were no slides, how would I visually describe what's going on? So, you know, you need to have the resilience for the tech going down, plan B. Yeah. And never forget that you're there to entertain. It's not about you. It's about entertaining the people that are sitting in front of you.
Gosh, loads there, actually. I mean, you're right, because you can't control everything. And when it can throw you completely, yeah, can't it? It really can.
Oh, my God,
can.
It did. And then I thought, oh. And then you get that awful thing. Oh, I've not done my best. Oh, and I hate that. I hate feeling that I failed. I've not done my best. I've done something that I could have done better. That eats away. And I've had to learn not to let that, then not to let me stop doing it again. Do you know, because fear is such a debilitating thing, and shame that you haven't done it right. And I think Yora was saying in your podcast, you have your mistakes, your failures,
yeah,
are your biggest, you know, growth assets. So yeah, I'm learning to accept that sometimes I'm going to cock it up,
yeah,
and I've got to learn, why don't I like it? Why am I unhappy? What can I do to make that better?
Yeah, that's great advice. Always thinking, you know, 1% better. Oh, that didn't go so well. How can I tweak here? And I'm with you 100%. I think if you know your topic and you're passionate about what you're speaking about, that will come through. And generally speaking, people aren't looking to trip you up, or, you know, they're there because they're attending because they're interested in what you've got to say,
yeah,
aren't they?
They,
you
know, are.
And the other thing that, because I used to have to do loads of speaking in my corporate career, but I was never trained. It was just expected, no, you had to do it and,
yeah,
stand up in front of thousands of people. So when I came out of corporate life, I thought, oh, I'm going to go and get myself formally trained on public speaking, you know, because I think it'd be a good, yeah, good thing to do. And it really helped me, you know, having a structure for a speech, a flow. And then you reminded me of, like, utilization. So when something goes wrong, how do you use it in a way in the speech without it completely throwing you off track? And I had a situation where once I was doing a speech, and I was flailing my arms around, and I was using a flip chart to kind of write, you know, this acronym that I was using for the structure of my speech. And it was about imposter syndrome. And the O stood for okay, it's okay to fail. And as soon as I had written this up, I flailed my arms around, knocked the entire flip chart off the stage, nearly took out the first row.
Yeah.
And I was like, I went, see, it's okay to fail. As I'm scrabbling around in my heels, trying to get this bloody flip chart on the thing. But, you know, things happen, don't they? And I think it's a bit of humour, you know, and actually people will probably get more out of.
Yeah, I realise now, my husband sort of said, because I have to turn the pages, so you can't remember necessarily if you're talking 45 minutes, you know, so you do have a bit of prompt. And of course, I then had to turn the page, so I have to nip diet down. And I said, and I'm a bit slow, I go, this is all part of being a disabled person, things take longer. And they just, you know, people just laugh then. And I think, yeah, turn a negative into a positive. And the more you do it, the more confident you get. And you have a few lines up your sleeve that you can say. And so I'm really enjoying it. I had my first non-gardening one, my first inspirational one. And that's, inspiration is a bit of a word for people with disability, because people think you're inspirational just because you're disabled. And so I had to turn that and look at it and see how I could find the inspiration in what I do that's not related to the disability,
yeah,
so that I'm happy to use to do the talk.
Mm.
And so that was really an interesting, you know, it took me about 3 weeks to work it out, you know, and looking up all sorts of definitions of inspiration. And I got there, do you know what I mean? And then I was happy. So I have to be happy in what I'm going to do and what I'm going to talk about.
Yeah.
And I do like it, but it's a lot of work, because I think it's a lot of preparation, and you owe it to your audience, you know, to be good, I think.
Yeah, definitely. But loads of really great advice there for people. And I always think, you know, you everyone's got a gift, haven't they? Everyone's got something of interest or a story or an experience that will help other people.
Yeah.
So I think you've got an obligation to share that with the world.
But it's putting it clearly, isn't it? It's putting it in a sort of so they can take it home.
Yes.
Not just waffling on.
No.
So you sort of have to do a bit of business in there. You have to sort of structure it.
Yes.
The key points that they're going to get, and then they can go, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Definitely, definitely. That's what I often use, like, as I say, acronyms, just to try and help it stick with people's brains, you know. And, just keep it simple, stupid, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's the frame. Especially when it comes to gardening. Don't get all technical with me, gardening. I will be enlisting your support when we actually develop this place.
We'll be,
for sure.
We'll be planting this up.
Fantastic. So what response have you had from being on Gardener's World then? You know, from people that watch, and, you know, do you get lots of letters and responses from people? What's the response been?
The thing that made me totally committed was that I think in the first couple of weeks, the first couple of episodes, I got letters from young mums with children with disabilities, because there are similar disabilities to my arms that were not caused by genetic. And, I remember my mum, and I read the psychiatric report on her. You know, she felt the world was lost to me. And young mums do. They think they're going to have such a hard time. And here they could see, you know, an older woman in a nice house, living a middle class life, with a family, running everything, and that what was possible, and with a bit of adaption, and not being afraid to be on the telly, and not being afraid to put herself out there. And I think it put it all in perspective. So I got these letters from, you know, young mums thanking me, and some of them are asking me for stuff, because I've got a YouTube thing that I used to put my massage on, but I also put on things like how to put your socks on with no hands, which is great for elderly people as well. So how am I child going to put my socks on? I go, well, go. And then the lady the other day, her daughter was just learning to dress, and I could send her off to the, you know, this. It was literally, how can she put her socks on? And then I had people who'd had strokes, or who were saying, you know, encouraging them to get back out there, and they can mend and get better. And people who had depression, a lot of people had depressions, thinking, she can do it, I can do it, I've got no excuse. And that's a lot. And lots of people just like to see me on the telly. They say, we just like seeing, you know, I've got a disabled sister, or I've got a disabled wife, and it's just really nice to see the BBC getting more people, you know, on the telly. So that it's all, you know, it's all normal. Mm. We're normalising the situation.
Yeah, yeah. And it's about role models, isn't it? Because I think if you can recognise a trait, or a physicality around, oh, someone looks like me, has comes from my background or whatever, and they're doing it. So, oh my gosh, that means I can do it as well.
And this thing about inspiration is really interesting, because I was watching Strictly Come Dancing. I got something called Meniere's disease in 2017, and it took the hearing out on my left ear, so I became partially deaf. I always feel I'm a bit like the Black Knight in A Life of Brian, where they hack off your arms, and they hack off your legs, and then they hack off the other bit. It's still going. And so Rose Ailing Alice is deaf, and she was dancing on Strictly. She couldn't hear it. And they did this amazing thing halfway through one of the dances. They took the sound out. So nobody had music, and Rose carried on dancing, and she was dancing to the movement of her partner, I found it inspirational. I'm thinking, oh my goodness, you know, she's can do all this, because I love dancing, and I was finding sound really difficult. And I was thinking, she can do it, I can do it. So I'm involved in dancing now, and I go to my dance class every week, and I needed inspiration, because it was new to me. Being partially deaf was new to me. And seeing someone, you know, with that, I needed it. And so I think it's really important to have, you know, she was my inspiration. Mm. So I know what I now, once I saw her, I know what I'm doing. I know what I'm for. Do you know what I mean? On the telly.
Yeah, yeah. Do you feel like that's sort of a bit of a purpose for you now then? So do you find that you've found, obviously you've done loads of amazing things throughout your entire life, but, you know, is that the purpose?
No.
What's your purpose then, if it's not?
So my purpose is to enjoy my life and have fun and reach my potential. So my purpose is to be, you know, make the most of this new career. I don't want to stop working. Mm. I always believe, you know, life can begin at 60, 70, 80. And my purpose is to make the most of my life and to give as much as I can if it happens to be that, it's coming out of that. But if it was something else that I was doing, because I really like painting as well. So if I was an artist, I wouldn't be inspiring people. I'd just be painting all the time. So my purpose is to make the most of my life and to enjoy it. I'm only here once. And if I can help other people along the way, but my purpose isn't to help other people. My purpose is to live my life and what comes out of it. If we can make that happen and help other people, that's great. But I want to fulfill my potential.
Mm. Yeah, well, that's, I suppose helping other people is the byproduct of actually having that really clear. But it's so interesting because a lot of people, they don't know what their purpose is. You know, I mean, I see it all the time with, you know, whether I'm working with someone individually from a mentoring point of view or business or whatever. And sometimes I say, well, what's your purpose? What's your reason why? Why'd you get out of bed in the morning? You know, what is it? And a lot of people really struggle because they never give themselves the time to think about it, you know, the headspace. And it's so important because I think if you know, then it guides you, doesn't it?
It does, it does. And I read, I think we're going to talk about advice, but I read a book, was it Ben Hunt, I think, because when I was training the rowers, we were rowed across, it's called the Celtic Challenge, so we rowed from Arklow to Aberystwyth. It happens every 2 years. And it's a 24-hour rowing race, and I was the cox. And again, a bunch of enabling people. I didn't think I'd be doing the race because you all had to row. It was rotational. And they said, no, we'll have 11 rowers and you will be the cox. And some other people have to do the coxing at some stage. And they took me with them and they made it happen. And they had harnesses and all this sort of thing. But I wanted them to do well. And we were training for other races as well. So I read Ben Hunt's Does It Make the Boat Go Faster? And that's all about Olympic rowing. And that was really key to me, what being focused. I got a lot out of that book. About, you know, at what I'm doing, you know, I want to do this. Does it make the boat go faster? So if potential, does it get me to where I want to be? So if somebody asks me to do something, I always think, how's that going to fit in with the overall thing? Is it going to make me get to where I want to go? Is it going to enhance or detract or cause me good stress or bad stress? So I use a lot of Olympic training methods to focus my mind.
Well, that's it. High performance in sports, high performance in life, business, relationships, whatever. Talk about that event a little bit more, because obviously that was like a massive achievement that you did. Just explain what was involved.
So what was involved is you have 12 people in a Celtic rowing boat, which is four rowers, and you rotate and you go over to Ireland and you row back across through the night to get to back into Wales. And none of us had done, one of us I think had done it before. And so we trained, and the lifeboat men at Mumbles Lifeboat were our support team. And I knew a lot of them, you know. So we would train in Mumbles Bay, and they would have they'd harness me out of the boat into the mothership because you have to keep changing. And I didn't really want to do it, but the boys were all going, you are going to do this, you know, with us, because I raced with them every week and I was part of the team. And I was famous for my foul language, encouraged them. row you effers, I think was what I used to say. So we got to Arklow, it's the worst weather ever, and they were going to cancel the race. And our mothership, which is our support ship, failed to make it across the sea. So in the end, somebody came to our rescue at the last minute, a little sailing boat. You don't really want a sailing boat in bad weather when you're rowing in a straight line, because it has to tack back and forward, with their two kids, their dog, and they both all smoked, and this tiny boat with 12 rowers. So we set off out of Arklow Harbour with horrific waves, and it's my responsibility as a cox to keep my crew safe. And I steer with my feet, And so we were rowing out with this wall of water, and never had I wished I was elsewhere. And we rowed on, and the first team went on. I was doing 2 hours, they were doing 1 hour. Went in, and then they got on this boat, and of course it was so sway, they started to throw up. And then they were so violently, and we thought we'd have to get the rescue helicopter. So we lost sort of four members of our team very quickly. And then I got on the boat, and I was sick. Everyone was sick on the boat, but I wasn't that sick because I wasn't having to row. So I was back and forth. And then by the end of it all, I think we were halfway through, and I was down to four crew, and they'd have to row the whole thing. And I wouldn't call it. This is my job to call it, because I was the cox. And I wouldn't, because I thought everybody would say it was because I was disabled. So I was really bad. So I kept rowing. I said, I'm sure we'll manage. And then the lifeboat men who know me said, no, we have to stop. This is unsafe. Yeah, so we had to go all the way back then on this boat. So it was quite wonderful. I was lying on the top because all the ill people were at the bottom because I couldn't really hold on to the top of the yacht. So I was wrapped in the arms of a young lifeboat man in a silver blanket, looking at the stars, going back to Arklow. So it was a failure. But it wasn't for me. It was such an experience. Mm. It was a failure that I didn't call it and I should have taken responsibility. But it was the most amazing experience and one that I would, not for other people, I would never have had the opportunity to be in the middle of the ocean, you know, rowing across the sea in the dark with huge waves. But, you know, I'm just such a lucky bird. You know, that's it, people who've enabled me to do that, you know, and that's sort of teamwork. Yeah. But I was giving them something, obviously, that they needed, and they gave me something that I needed.
Yeah, absolutely. What a brilliant story. I've got to earn a bit goose pimply then when you were talking. Yeah, that's fantastic. So you'll have had loads of...
I wasn't the only one who failed. Half of them never made it.
Oh, well, this is important for the record.
This is important.
But interesting that you didn't call it because you were concerned about that it would be seen because of the disability. Yeah. So,
I often push myself too far.
Yeah.
Because I'm trying to keep up.
Yeah, I can imagine. I can imagine you do, actually. Yeah. You don't want that to be the excuse or what people say. Yeah. You want it to be judged on the actual thing itself.
Yeah, I don't want to be, I'm learning now. I'm learning as I get older. I just can't keep up, you know, and I'm learning that now.
But no, what a fascinating story. Yeah. Amazing. So you'll have had loads of advice, Sue, over the years, and you've shared stacks already for anyone that's listening to this. Any standout advice for you that's just kind of really stayed with you for years or, you know, you return to time and time again?
I think my cousin, who's in sort of helping people develop to get jobs, when I first got this, with two bits, when I first got asked by the BBC, I thought I was worried about being a token on the telly. And a life coach and business coach is a friend of mine, and he said, but Sue, someone's got to be a token. He said, you don't change things unless someone's a token. And if you've got to be a token, you've got to think about that, but it's not a bad thing to be, So that was sometimes, that. And the other one was think about what you're asked to do. Is it going to cause you good stress or is it going to cause you bad stress? So when people ask me, I never say yes straight away. I think about the reality. Always, you're asked to do something, but what's the reality of that? How many days is it going to take you? What's the journey? Who are you going to be in front of? What environment are you going to be in? You know, what are you going to gain from it? I only do the things now that I think are going to be good stress. Mm. So, again, from the rowing one, will it make my boat go faster?
Yeah, I love that.
Will it get me to where I want to be?
Yeah, fantastic. And you're right, on the good stress, bad stress, that's also linked to being able to say no to certain things in the right way. You know, not actually feeling, because I think... Certainly, I mean, I've been guilty of this, especially when I was younger. You know, you're almost a bit of a people pleaser. Yeah, I don't want to say no to people or say yes to everything. And then you end up being really stressed because you've taken on too much. And then you don't end up delivering anyway properly. So you can end up disappointing, even though that wasn't your intention. But I think it probably comes with a little bit of maturity as well.
I think it does, that ability to say. I think I had to read a book on how to say no because I found it hard. And now I think because people ask you to do a lot now. And now I'm getting really good at saying no. And I also think I get my calendar out and I look at what I've got already in that month. I can only do so much. And I realise now I need rest days. With menus, you need rest days. So I've been forced by my health to go, actually, no, I've got those two things. That's enough. That's enough. Yeah. And I think knowing that I've got enough, you know, when you've got enough, you don't keep striving. Do you know what I mean? Mm. I think that's strive for more and more, that balance between that's actually enough and I want to enjoy this.
Yeah, that's great. Well, I'm glad you said yes to this and not no. Otherwise, we'd have missed out on an amazing episode. So, yeah, thank you for saying yes to me. So this year, it's been a great year already. We've still got quite a bit to run of the year. But if you could think about describing this year in one word, Sue, what would it be and why?
Fun. Fun, because in the last 2 years I've had to do show gardens and that is really hard work. No, it's a massive learning curve. I learnt loads, really stressful. And this year I've got all the shows to go to. I've got the TV and I've got no show. I'm just doing my, I've changed my garden quite a bit and I'm just gardening for myself. Obviously it'll be, it's fodder for the business, but so I'm looking forward to it rather than being stressed. Lovely. And so fun. I'm going to have fun.
Excellent. And that's a good reminder for all of us, right? Have fun, you know, don't take life too seriously.
Yeah. Yeah. I've learned that, you know, it was great doing that. You know, I've done that. I've been there. I may have one more garden in me, but it's not something I need to do again. Do you know what I mean? That level of stress, that level of taking me away from Castle Bay, you know, away for weeks at a time. And you know, you only have one life and this is where I want to be in that water as much as possible.
Yeah, yeah, sounds like a good reminder. We only have one life. Yes, yeah. Make it count. Yeah. And the podcast is called Brave, Bold, Brilliant, as you know. What does that mean to you, Sue?
Well, bravery is very interesting, isn't it? Because when I got Meniere's, I became very fearful. Because if you fall over, if you get vertigo with short arms, you can't go anywhere. You can't prop yourself. You can't reach out and stabilize yourself. So I became quite housebound. I'd had like 10 minutes warning and I couldn't drive more than 2 hours. And it doesn't happen too much now, but you never know when it's going to happen. So I became very housebound and very insular and frightened. And of course, that perpetuates your mental state, perpetuates your illness, and a lot of time because it can trigger it, you get a physical thing and then you're down the rabbit hole. So I read a book called by Joe Dispenza, who is like a meditative man, he's like a world class thing, and he spoke about how fear of a past illness can affect your future. So I had to be brave and believe what he was telling me, that I had to change my mindset and be bold, you know, be brave, and do it, you know, take on, because the BBC was the first thing that I'd done, having to go away again with this head that I could collapse at any minute. That's really paid off. So being bold and going for it, and then being brave to actually put myself out there again and get on a train and, you know, and not know what would happen. So that's what that means, you know, overcoming your fears, you know, accepting you've got limitations and putting in place things to cope with them, but going forth and, you know, being brave and doing it, you know, don't let the fear get you, you know, and being brilliant. Well, I want to do my best, you know, I want to, if I'm public speaking, if I'm presenting, I'm working on the presenting. I wouldn't say I've got it completely sussed yet. The public speaking, I'm, you know, I've had a lot of people come up to me and say, my God, that was really brilliant. I had a standing ovation at the Women's Institute, which is apparently really difficult to get. So I think that I do want whatever I do to be really good. So they will be my, you know, do it well. It's brilliant. And yeah, and overcome your fear and just, you know, be brave.
Fantastic. Well, Sue, honestly, it's been a joy. Thank you so much. I've really enjoyed our conversation and I can't wait to see what's next for you. How can people get in touch with you, actually, Sue?
Well, I've got a website, suekent.com. I'm on Instagram at suekentathome and Facebook, suekentathome. And yeah, they can get my book from there or from Amazon. And yes, and come see me at the shows.
Absolutely.
I have a list of where I am this year on my website. So, yeah. And so I'm quite easy to get in contact with.
Brilliant. We can find you everywhere. Fantastic. Thank you, Sue.
Lovely. Thank you, Juliette.
I really hope you've enjoyed Brave, Bold, Brilliant. Don't forget to subscribe and share with all your friends. And if you've enjoyed listening, I'd love it if you'd leave me a 5-star review.